بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. ثم أما بعد، proceed. So today inshallah we'll talk about the ingredients and byproducts, derivatives. We said that we will have a course of 4 sessions on food and what you can eat and what you may not eat. And the first session was about what it is that you can eat. In terms of animals, we have animate and inanimate objects, and you have plants, and the plants and inanimate objects are all halal to eat, unless harmful. Okay. And then you have animals, and we talked about the animals, and we said that you have sea food and land food, and then we divided the land food into two different types, those who are carnivorous and those who are predatorial or meat eaters in general, and those who are plant eaters. And we said that we eat plant eaters, and those plant eaters could be either wild or domestic, and we talked about the difference. Wild you can hunt, domestic you must slaughter. If the domestic became wild, you may hunt. If the wild became under control, you must slaughter. So after the last session was about slaughtering and the preparation for and post-slaughtering and so on. This session will be about derivatives, byproducts, ingredients. And it is very hard to categorize this session, right? There are millions of derivatives. In fact, you can't keep track of them except by numbers. Or not millions, but many, many derivatives and byproducts and ingredients. So the way you have to approach this, and that is extremely important also to retain information, you have to have folders inside your mind. Because if the information are not archived well inside your mind, it is extremely difficult to retrieve them. So imagine, your mind as like whatever national library is. You've got to divide it into rooms, and the rooms got to be divided into aisles, and the aisles have to be divided into sub aisles. And then folders, and then files, and then items, so on. So, how do you approach this topic? You have to answer certain questions to be able to approach this topic. The first thing is, what is the rule, what is the general rule for things? Should we abstain until we're certain, or should we proceed unless we have reasonable suspicion of the impermissibility? So we abstain until we are certain of the permissibility of a particular food, a particular item of food type, or should we proceed until we have found a concern? Proceed until you have found concern. And the proof on this is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said in the Quran, هو الذي خلق لكم ما في الأرض جميعا. It is He who created for you all this which is on earth. So everything that is on earth is ours to use it. If it is to be eaten, then it is ours to eat. If it is to be used, then it is ours to use. So everything. Unless you have directed from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that this may not be eaten. So that is the basic rule. Now when it comes to meat in particular, the rule is switched. Because meat in particular, when you have like meat in front of you, the rule is switched. Therefore, the default is to abstain if you have doubt, reasonable doubt, But that, again, is reasonable doubt. Like if someone, Muslim or Christian or Jew, gives you food, you may eat it and says, unless you have reasonable doubt that this is not slaughtered. But when the Jewish woman came to the Prophet ﷺ and gave him the goat, he did not inquire about the slaughtering, he did not inquire about the cooking, he did not inquire about anything, and he ate. Right? Which tells you that you will not need to inquire because otherwise it will be too difficult. However, once you have reasonable concern here that there is a problem, like, for instance, if you don't know who slaughtered, if there is like a slaughterhouse in which many, many people work, some of them are atheists, some are Christians, some are Jews, some are Zoroastrians, some are others, and you don't know who slaughters what, then I believe that you must abstain. Because here, you know, you don't really know who's slaughtering. And it was made permissible for us to eat from the food slaughtered by Muslims or the food slaughtered by the people of the book for a certain reason, not to, you know, elevate the people of the book to our rank that is different from others, but because out of recognition that they received a book from God in its origin, it was from God, and that they, during the time of the Prophet, they slaughtered, and most likely they did mention the name of Allah before they slaughtered during the time of the Prophet. So, since they followed the law in this particular area, then we were able to eat their meat, because that particular area was not corrupted. Now, the people of the book, we said, are the people of the book today. The people of the book today are the people of the book, because there is no conflict here between being the people of the book and disbelievers. Because the people of the book are disbelievers. Because Allah says in the Quran, سَمِيَكُنَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرَ مِنْ أَهْلِ كِتَبِهِ مُشْرِكِينَ مُنْفَكِينَ حَتَّى تَعْدِيَهُمُ الْبَيِّنَةِ. Disbelievers are out of the people of the book, and the pagans would have not abandoned their ways until the clear proof had come to them. So the relation that makes it difficult for people here nowadays is that they think that those are not the people of the book, because those are disbelievers, because they believe they ascribe partners to God. But the Quran called them the people of the book, even though they ascribe partners to God at the time the Quran was revealed, and it was about the remains of the book that they were holding on to. The remains of the book that they were holding on to. That's why they have this different status, because of the remains of the book. So you can marry from their women. Why? Because in the book, the Ten Commandments, it prohibits adultery. Because in the book there is the concept of chastity, there is the concept of morality, there is the concept of this and that. In the Bible, you can eat from their meat because in the book they must slaughter and shed the blood. It says this in the book. So if they go by the book, then we eat their meat. But it doesn't make any sense that they take this special status, because some people think this way, and it's quite strange. If a Muslim does not go by the book, his food is not halal, by agreement. So if the people of the book do not go by their book and slaughter, then their food is not halal. And there should be no confusion about this. The meat was made halal for us because their book says you must slaughter and you must shed the blood. That's all. Okay. So we said that the first thing that we want to ask ourselves about is everything is okay until proven otherwise. When you have meat in front of you, then the question is probability. You know, very small exceptions will not matter in rules in Islam. So if most likely this was slaughtered by Muslim, Christian, or Jew, then very small, you know, this could have died, you know, you have a factory, for instance. They slaughter all animals, but they slaughter like 1,000 chickens at a time. And one chicken may have died, but they do take precautions and they try to slaughter all the chickens. In this case, you will not come and say one chicken may have died before they slaughtered it, because they slaughtered 1,000 chickens at a time. Then you will not say this in this case. But if you have a factory where they are completely reckless, they don't really worry about it at all, or they don't slaughter to begin with, then that is a year. They're not going to say, you know, there are people who are welcome, they're going to eat their meat. So it is important to distinguish between these things. Now, so that's the first question. The second question that we need to ask ourselves about is this particular ingredient, derivative or byproduct, coming from plants, animal, or something else? If it comes from something else, inanimate objects, then it's probably fine. Unless it's harmful. Because there are a lot of things that are actually derived from petroleum, from petrochemicals. Food that you eat is derived from petrochemicals. Well, that is not, you know, petrochemicals, but it's not a question of halal or haram here. This is not pork, it's petrochemicals. But in Islam, لَا ضَرَرْ وَلَا ضِرَرْ, there shall be no harm, nor should there be any reciprocation of harm. So, if the people, the experts, say that it is okay to eat the stuff that's derived from petrochemicals, then go ahead. If they say that it is not okay, then abstain. Likewise, things are genetically engineered. If they say it is okay for your health, go ahead. If they say it's harmful, abstain. But I can't, you know, pull an ayah out of the Quran to say that genetic engineering is haram. How can you? It will have to go back to, is it harmful or not? It is a decision that is to be made by the experts, you know. And that's a good time to say, to make a disclaimer, that I'm not a chemist. So, you know, don't think that I'm providing you information from my scientific background, because my scientific background is not chemistry. You know, so just be careful with it. So that is the second question. Where is it coming from? So if it is coming from anything that is not animals, then it will all have to do with harm. You know, petrochemicals, genetically engineered, etc. Harm. Is it harmful or not? And it's not the decision of the scholars, it's the decision of the experts. Second thing, it is coming from animals. Is it coming from animals that are halal to eat? Don't worry about it. You can, whatever that byproduct is, if it is coming from beef that's been slaughtered, don't worry about it at all. If it is coming from an animal that is not halal to eat, or coming from an animal that is halal to eat, but you took it from the, you cut that part of the animal while it was alive, then it's not halal. Except if it is, you know, fair hair, feathers, or something of that nature, and not be removed while the animal is alive, should be okay. So, is it coming from an animal that's halal to eat, or coming from an animal that is not halal to eat? Then that would be the second question here. The third question here, in this category that we're still in, is which part of the animal? So if it's coming from an animal that's halal to eat, we're done with this, right? It's halal, it's okay. If it's coming from an animal that is not halal to eat, which part of the animal? And why which part of the animal? Because the flesh of the animal is what's haram to eat. Now we have disagreements over other parts of the animal. You have disagreements over the hide, for instance. So the Hanbalis say that the hide is not purified, and that there is a disagreement within the Hanbali, that it is not purified by tanning. The Shafi'is say it is purified by tanning, it seems that hides are purified by tanning. Hides are purified by tanning. Now, all hides are purified by tanning, because you have to understand that hides, they're connected to the animal through a layer of connective tissue. That layer of connective tissue can be easily removed by the process of tanning. Hides per se are not part of the flesh of the animal. So, all hides are purified by tanning? Some would say yes, and those are the Zahiris. Only the Zahiris would say all hides are purified by tanning, including pigs and dogs. The Hanafis would say all hides are purified by tanning, save pigs, except for pigs, including dogs. The Shafi'is would say all hides are purified by tanning, except dogs and pigs. Okay? The Hanbalis in the more popular position of the Mazhab, they will say that animal hides are not purified by tanning. It's got to be the hide of a halal animal, like the hide of sheep that was slaughtered or something to use, that you can use. Okay, so now if you have a byproduct that is coming from the hide, for instance, it does not take the same ruling as a byproduct that's coming from the flesh. Feathers and fur and hair is all okay, because that is not part of the animal. Keep it in mind. Feathers, hair and fur is not, this is not flesh. This is part of the animal that has a vegetarian life. Your hair, you know, if you pinch your hair, are you going to feel any pain? You're not going to feel any pain. This has vegetarian life. It grows like plants. The hair grows like plants. So you cut and it grows and so on. That's not part of the animal. It doesn't take the same ruling as the animal. Now, do bones, and whatever it is that's going to take the ruling of bones, such as teeth, for instance, are these pure or impure? Well, if we're not talking about the halal to eat animals, because the halal to eat animals are halal. All of the animal is halal. The animal that has been slaughtered. We're talking about the non-halal to eat animals. And we said that, you know, we said that hair and fur and feathers, that's all okay. We said that hides are controversial, and we did talk about the controversy. We said that okay, so that is the last category now is the bones and the teeth. Bones and teeth. And the bones and the teeth are controversial. It seems that they are halal. And why does it seem that they are halal? The Hanafis consider them to be halal. The Hanbalis consider them to be haram. But it seems that the Salaf, the righteous predecessors, used to allow the trade of ivory. And ivory is bone, because it's teeth, and teeth take the same ruling as bones. So the teeth of the elephants, canine of the elephants, overgrown. So now it seems that things that come from bones and teeth would also be okay. Okay, so now we said, where is it coming from? And how to eat, not how to eat, and what part of the animal is it coming from? All of those are questions that are important to talk about the byproducts and ingredients. So our first question to ask ourselves is, should we, you know, should the default be abstinence or not? The second is, where is this byproduct coming from? Now, the last question that we will ask ourselves is, what happens to this byproduct in the process of making this food, or this, in the process of making the final product, you know, because they just don't mix things like this, you know, and put them together and just give them for you to eat. It goes through a manufacturing process And this manufacturing process is a chemical process in which transformation of certain substances takes place. They become new substances. So the last question we need to ask ourselves is, does transformation change the ruling of what you'll eat? Does it change the ruling? Well, according to the Hanafis and Malikis, Hanafis except for Abu Yusuf, Hanafis except Abu Yusuf, and Malikis and Bahiris, it does change the ruling. So if something was impure, and then it goes through a process of transformation, that new substance will not take the ruling of the old substance. According to the Shafi'is, and the popular position within the Hanbali Madhab, Shafi'is and popular position within the Hanbali Madhab that has not been chosen by Ibn Taymiyyah. Ibn Taymiyyah sided with the Hanafis and Malikis on this issue. And he is, you know, a major Hanbali scholar. After him, all the Hanbalis would quote his position as a position within the Madhab. So, according to the Shafi'is and the Hanbalis and their popular position, they said it does not take a different ruling. So it will not be pure, and it will not be halal to use. So if it is coming from a dead animal, or it's coming from pork, or it's coming from something of that nature, it will never be pure according to them, no matter how much you do to it. Okay, well, it seems that the position of the majority is that transformation changes the rule. Because even the latter scholars, like Ibn Taymiyyah from the Hanbalis, they started to side with the majority that transformation does change the rule. And the point here is that it is a new substance, and they can say that eggs, for instance, and milk and all of that is coming from filth, blood, and so on. And that becomes milk. And then you drink that milk. And the plants that you eat, you know, are coming from the land. And the land is made up of dead bodies, basically. Most of the land, or a lot of the land is made up of dead bodies. Is that true? In fact, there is a poet who said, صحي هذه قبورنا تملأ الرحب فأين القبور من عهد عادي خفف الأرض ما خفف الوطأ ما أظن أديم الأرض إلا من هذه الأجساد. So he said, my friend, look at our graveyards, they fill the horizon. So where are the graveyards from the time of Ad? Walk lightly. I don't think that the surface of this earth is anything but the remains of the dead bodies. So walk lightly because you're walking on your ancestors' surface. So that surface of the earth, you know, people die and then they go to. So that's the position of the majority anyway. The transformation, if it becomes a new substance that does not share the features of the old substance, color, smell, taste, etc., you can't trace it back, the old substance, then it is a new substance that will take a different ruling. The problem is, most of the time the problem is, does it transform completely or not? Because it's not that easy. It's rather tricky. Because there were two large meetings done. One was done by the Fiqh Council that belongs to the Organization of Islamic Conference, OIC, and they invited many chemists, and they decided that there is actually complete transformation in the process of making gelatin. And they have a similar, they have like a, they have a well attended conference by the Islamic Organization for Medical Sciences. And they invited about 26, 27 scholars, and they invited chemists. And the chemists decided that there is no complete transformation. it is not because they made so a group made a mistake. It is the perception in the beginning. What are you talking about when you say transformation? So some of the chemists may think of a transformation. You're talking about the apparent features of a new substance. Or you're talking about the chemical makeup of the new substance, chemical makeup, apparent features of a new substance. Now this gelatin, the new substance called gelatin, does not look anything like the cartilage of pigs. So they will say, yes, there is complete transformation. Now another group of chemists will sit down, because sometimes you get frustrated when you hear a lot of controversy, but that is the nature of life. You just get used to it. And the controversy does not mean that one group is particularly wrong, because here this group looked at it from a different perspective. So those chemists thought, the chemical makeup is different, features are different, this is complete transformation. The other chemists, said, no, it's actually not complete, because give me any gelatin as a chemist, and I will trace it back to its origin. I will tell you, give me any gelatin. Do whatever you want to do to the substance, and give it to me, and I will tell you if this is bovine or porcine, if this is from pork or from beef. In this case, they were able to convince the scholars that there is no complete transformation. Therefore, the scholars said gelatin is not permissible to use. The other scholars said it is permissible to use, but they said that the other scholars, because the meeting of the OIC was first, so they were a little bit shy of saying it is permissible to use, but they said it seems that it is permissible. However, we recommend for Muslims to be cautious and to not use it in food, but they can use it in medicine. The first meeting of that group of scholars from the OIC, they pretty much reached the same conclusion, but they were more forceful in prohibiting it in food, but they allowed it in medicine. Both meetings allowed it, or gatherings or conferences allowed it in medicine, because that makes perfect sense. You can actually take something from it for the case of necessity, like if you want to have heart transplant, for instance, transplant for arteries into your heart, and they tell you that the only thing that we know how to handle would be pigs. We can only get arteries from pigs. Then in this case, it's allowable. In Islam, it's allowable. It's a necessity. It will be allowable. Because you're not going to say to the guy, die, because it's from pigs. It would be allowable. Certainly, in a Muslim country, Muslim physicians will be looking for alternatives, will be trying to find something that's a little bit, more wholesome, and so on. But it will be allowable in this case. Now, so medicine it's a done deal. But they said in food, some said you want to stay away from it and be cautious and so on. And the others, who did not believe there is complete transformation, they said, haram, stop, don't eat gelatin in food. So I'm not talking about gelatin now. We're still talking about the principles and guidelines. There is one question that we need to still ask ourselves, one remaining question. So the first one was, what is the default? Second one is, where is this byproduct coming from? The third question is there transformation, complete transformation or not? The last one is, how much of this byproduct is present in the new substance? Because we have a principle in Islam that's called the yasir ma'fiyun anhu. Al-yasir, trivial amounts, ma'fiyun anhu, are exempt. Trivial amounts are exempt. Or trivial things are exempt. Triviality is exempt. So things that are trivial in amount are exempt. Where do we bring this idea from? Yasir Mafiyanimu. From so many. This is actually, Yasir Mafiyanimu is called the legal maxim. Legal maxim. Because we find it throughout the, or fiqh. in this particular area of food, the Sahaba, as reported by Abu Dawood, when they opened the Madain, they ate from the cheese of the Zoroastrians. Now, the cheese of the Zoroastrians is made from the rennet, or rennet, or rennin, whatever you want to call it, that is taken from the animals. Now, the Zoroastrians, the animals, even if they slaughter it, isn't it considered maita, dead? It is dead, even if they slaughter, because the Zoroastrians are not Muslim, they're not Christian, they're not Jew. So the Sahaba ate from that cheese, even though the enzymes, the renin, was taken from their dead animals. How would the Sahaba do this? Why would the Sahaba do this? Because of that principle that we have, al-yasir ma'fiyun anhu, trivial things are exempt. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala yuridu Allahu bikum al-yusr wa la yuridu bikum al-usr. Allah wants ease for you and does not intend hardship for you. And if trivial things are not exempt, life would be very difficult. So trivial things are exempt. Now, that is the first question that we need to ask ourselves. And these are the most important questions to address any byproduct. Can you repeat them? What are the four questions? What's the default, you know? What part of the animal is it coming from? Transformation is the third. Yes, the triviality. Okay. So now, let's start talking about a few things, a few examples. And as I said, I'm not a chemist, so... Okay, so why do you hear the Muslims, you know, making such a big deal about whey and casein, which was the other ingredients of the milk? In milk, you have two different types of protein. The casein and the whey. The whey is the lighter, and the casein is the thicker. When you add the enzyme, which is renin or renin, to the milk, the casein part of it will change into cheese, and the whey part of it will become even lighter in consistency. So both whey and casein, they sometimes talk about is it halal or not halal. Why do they talk about this? They talk about this because the enzyme that has been used could have been an enzyme that came from non-halal to eat animals. Because depends on how you want to say it. It's R-E-N-N-E-T. So in French it's rene. And in English it would be, I think, rennet. But it is a French word. So that is, when that is added, it's taken from the fourth stomach of the calf, when that's added to the milk, then it separates away from the casein, and then this is how they make cheese. So if you believe, and the use of this, that this rennet comes from non-halal feed animals, is not halal, and it makes everything impure now and not halal, then you're not going to eat the whey, you're not going to eat things that have the whey, things that have a casein, and you're not going to eat most of the cheese, because that's how cheese is made. All right? Now, I do not want, you should never belittle the ijtihad or the religious commitment of your brothers. When I say what I believe to be stronger, that does not belittle their opinion and their religious commitment. I believe that this is all okay. Because as I indicated from before, the Sahaba ate from the cheese of the Zoroastrians, which is made by the enzymes that are taken from the animals that were slaughtered by the Zoroastrians, which are still considered dead animals for us. So now we will have, you know, using my own reasoning, now we should have no problem with Jesus, no problems with enzymes, no problems with caffeine, no problems with whey. Just using the principle of trivial things are exempt. Okay. But it's not only trivial things are exempt, because keep in mind that the animal, the parts of the animal, you know, this enzyme that's taken from the animal, some people also argue that it's not flesh. It's a liquid. So it is different from the flesh. And we all agree that there is a difference between the hair, bone, and the flesh. Okay. So that's that part of, so that's an example on trivial things. It's also an example on the part of the animal, and at the same time, you know something called najasa by proximity? Propinquity, which is by proximity, nearness, closeness. That najasa is a light najasa. So the enzyme is sitting inside the stomach of the animal, which is najis, because it's a dead animal. So it becomes lightly najis by the proximity, by, you know, adherence to, or being next to the flesh. But in by itself, it is not the flesh, but it becomes lightly najis. So the light najasa is exempt, being that the amount that will be used is very small, amount of the enzyme that will be used to accelerate this chemical reaction, to separate between the caffeine and the whey, is very small amount, and the najasa is light in nature because it's najasa by proximity. So that's another concept. So we have the light majestic, we have the trivial amount, and we have the fact that the part of the animal that we saw that it's not coming from the flesh. Take another thing, which is the gelatin and the glycerin. The gelatin and the glycerin as a category together, they are certainly less than the category of animal shortening and lard. Animal shortening and lard, first of all, no one uses animal shortening or lard anymore because we know they are not healthy. So that's a good thing. Unless you get food from outside of the U.S., then it may have animal shortening or lard. But here in the U.S., I don't think that people are using animal shortening or lard anymore. Lard has become almost obsolete in those. You know, some people can buy lard from some place and they can cook with it, they can do whatever they want. But I'm talking about, the candy that you buy from a supermarket. You're not going to find candy that has any lard. Yes. One second here. So you're talking about, so the apple pie now that's sold in Walmart has lard? But does it say? Well, I don't buy them at all, but I need to know. But they would say on the box on the outside, was they lard? Don't eat lard. Okay. Yeah, but well, they will check for other things, so they come by the lard, I guess, the word lard. Okay, so don't eat, not pies, just look for the word lard. Lard or animal shortening, that's out of the question. Okay? Then, the gelatin and glycerin are a separate category. Animal shortening is like animal fat. So, lard and animal shortening is out of the question. Now, gelatin and glycerin are a different category. And why are they a different category? because of a couple of issues. One, glycerin, first of all, they can be obtained from non-animal sources, and they can be obtained from seafood, and they cannot be obtained from beef, and they can be obtained from pork, but we thought that we, you know, because here in the U.S., in the West, it makes perfect sense to use pork. It's cheap. You know, so it makes perfect sense to get those things from pork. Therefore, as a Muslim, you should not say, well, it can come from any place, and I'm just, well, that is naive and foolish, and not being cautious about what you eat, when it is extremely important to purify and make wholesome your food. So, if you are, you know, if you are in a place where pork is really not that popular, then you should eat and should not be too obsessive about things and too, like, obsessive. But here, it makes sense that they use pork because it's economical. And it's not haram for them, and it's economical, therefore it makes sense that they use it. So be careful about animal sourcing at large. Gelatin and glycerin. The issue with gelatin and glycerin is, why is it a different category? Because it's a controversial issue. It's not lard. You know, you're not going to find a Muslim scholar who will tell you, no, that's fine, you can eat lard. No one will tell you that. But glycerin and gelatin, that is when the controversy starts. And why does it start here? Because some people will think there is complete transformation, some people will think there is no complete transformation. But also, some people think that this glycerin is actually coming from hides, predominantly from hides. The glycerin is coming predominantly from hides, skin, animals. And they think that this process will have completely changed it, and then it is okay. My own take on this is that gelatin and glycerin are to be avoided if it's not permissible to eat gelatin and glycerin. Unless you know that this is actually good gelatin. You know, gelatin that is not coming from animals. Or glycerin. For instance, you can go to, this would be very helpful, practically speaking, you can go to those veggie websites. Those like vegans that are really meticulous about animal byproducts. So go to the vegan website and check if you want some good information about certain byproducts. Go to those websites by vegan, and they'll let you know. You know, for instance, Trident for the gum, chewing gum. There's one thing that has something called hot splashing, has beef gelatin. All the rest, they don't have any animal byproducts in them. All the other types. And this was on a vegan website. So they'll be quite helpful in that regard. So gelatin and glycerin, you should not eat them because those are not trivial in amounts. They are not used in very, 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 very small portions. They're used actually to add texture, to add, you know, to add taste, texture, etc., to the product. Not to accelerate a reaction. They're not used in very, very small portions, like a drop on a barrel, to accelerate a reaction. So gelatin and glycerin, they're a second category from lard and animal shortening, but you should still not eat them. Now, if they are in medicine and there is no alternative, then it is fine, according to the vast majority of the scholars. If they're in medicine, there's no alternative, they're fine, according to the very, very vast majority of scholars. The third category would be other things, such as enzymes, emulsifiers, monoglycerides, diglycerides, lecithin, granite, all of that. Oh, and all of those are used to not for their own, not for their own taste or color. They are used to accelerate the reaction or the chemical reaction in one way or another, or to disperse the fat droplets through the liquid. That's the emulsifiers. So the fat droplets being droplets that are hydrophobic, they are afraid of water, afraid of dispersing within the water. Emulsifiers will make them hydrophilic, so they disperse within the water. They love the water instead of have fear from the water. And so those are the emulsifiers. And those emulsifiers are used in very trivial amounts. And whether it is also the rennet, which will separate between the caffeine and the whey, all of that will be used in trivial amounts. And all of that should be okay. All of that should be okay. Lecithin, biglycerides, monoglycerides, rennet, all of it should be fine. So this is how we divide those things that come from animals. If it is animal shortening or lard or something, then this is to be avoided, certainly, by green. If this is something where transformation is a possibility and there is disagreement and there is that, my position is that they must be avoided unless they are in medicine with no alternatives. The other things that are not used for their own texture and color, and they are used in trivial amounts, and there are usually enzymes or emulsifiers, may be used because they exist in trivial amounts. As we said, the Sahaba radhiyallahu anhum, when they entered the Medan, they had some disease that's made by the enzymes of the Zoroastrians, indicating the trivial amounts are exempt. So that is the summary. You're going to be watching for lard, animal shortening, gelatin, and glycerin, as far as that direction is concerned. As far as the liquor direction is concerned, or the alcohol business is concerned, you must avoid alcohol in all foods. But chocolate liquor is not alcohol. The word liquor per se means what? Liquid. So the word liquor does not mean alcohol. But when you, for your own safety, consider liquor to be alcohol, to be synonymous with alcohol, but this is, just keep this in mind, just one thing to keep in mind. Chocolate liquor is not alcohol. Chocolate liquor is not alcohol. But for your own purpose, liquor is alcohol, and alcohol is liquor. But in reality, it's not. But that's what you should remember. This liquor is alcohol, and alcohol is liquor. Now, alcohol, any CNS depressant, any CNS depressant is to take the ruling of alcohol and must be avoided, whether it's sniffed, eaten, smoked, or, injected. Any CNS depressant must be avoided. No, trivial amounts of alcohol that has been added, you should still abstain. A trivial amount of alcohol that it would exist in the final product just because fermentation is part of the natural process of making food. And fermentation happens. There is trivial amount of alcohol in bread. But trivial amount that has been added, you should avoid it. No, but vanilla here, this is not a trivial amount that has been added. Vanilla, the alcohol here, is used as a bleach. The issue with vanilla here is that the vanilla itself is... Let me tell you this. If you eat this vanilla, are you going to get drunk? Okay. Well, let's take it backward here. Is there alcohol in the vanilla now? What I'm talking about is alcohol that has been added to the product, and there is still alcohol now that can be tasted, can be smelled, can be appreciated some way. But in the vanilla, the alcohol is, you know, like when they cook with alcohol, for instance, they cook for alcohol so that you can appreciate the fish. Because there is still some taste remaining. But in the case of vanilla, alcohol is used in the bleach, not like, you know, soy sauce, for instance. The bottom line is, drink it. If you keep on drinking it and you die before you get drunk, it is not alcohol. And if you get drunk before you die, it is alcohol. So we need a balance here. It would be still impermissible if it still has the features of alcohol, even if you use it in trivial amounts, because the Prophet said, كل مسكر خمر وكل مسكر حرام. Every مسكر, every intoxicant is خمر, and every intoxicant is forbidden. And the Prophet said, ما أسكر كثيره فقليله حرام. That which will be intoxicant in large amounts is forbidden. Forbidden small amounts. So even if someone says, I will take this drop of alcohol and add it to my salad, and this will, it is impossible that this will cause intoxication, that is still haram. It's still haram. Because in large amounts, this very substance that you're taking now to add to your food, in large amounts will be intoxicant. Therefore, it is haram to use it even in small amounts. Now, the issue of vanilla or the issue of the other substances, things, you know, that in which alcohol is not present as a taste or a smell or anything in the final product, you can't appreciate alcohol at all, then you'll say to yourself, well, if it is still intoxicant in large amounts, then it is forbidden. You know, forget about alcohol. Anything that is intoxicant in large amounts is forbidden.
What about the tobacco?
Is it intoxicant? Tobacco is certainly forbidden, but not because it's intoxicant, because it's harmful. The manufacturers of this particular poison write on the pack of cigarettes, very harmful. So I don't know, if someone smokes tobacco and the manufacturer of that poison tells them on the very front of the packet, very harmful, and then he continues to smoke. It is not only haram, it's a bit criminal, because sometimes... Okay, so I'll phrase it in lighter words. Sometimes... Some degree of foolishness is actually criminal. It should be punishable. And that's...
The light of Islam, what it says about the people.
Well, in the light of Islam, Islam says, لا ضرر ولا ضرار. There should be no harm, nor should be any reciprocation of harm. Islam says that the body that Allah gave you is a trust that He entrusted you with. And it is not up to you to do whatever you want to it. You can't cut a finger and say, it's mine, it's my body, I can do whatever I want. It is forbidden, prohibited, haram, to cut your finger and say, it's mine, I can do whatever I want. And Islam says, when Allah says that about the Prophet, He makes permissible for them that which is wholesome, and He makes forbidden for them that which is khaba'ith. Khaba'ith means harmful or filthy. Filthy and harmful, both. Would be khaba'ith. And Islam says, وَكُلُوا وَشْرَبُوا وَلَا تُسْرِفُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَحُبُّ الْمُسْرِفِينَ. Eat and drink and do not be excessive or extravagant, for Allah likes not the extravagant ones. And if someone buys, you know, pays like $3 for a pack of cigarettes so that he can hurt himself and give himself like a lung cancer, then those $3 are certainly excessiveness and extravagance, because, you know, you could have bought, you know, oranges and bananas for your kids for like $30, and that would be okay. But those $3 would be extravagance because there is no use. Here's throwing $3 for this. Like, if you throw them away, that would even be better than buying a pack of cigarettes. Because if you throw them away, you would have thrown away $3. But if you buy a pack of cigarettes, you would have thrown away those $3 and caused yourself lung cancer. Or what will eventually lead to some type of, you know, major incapacitating disease. Islam says when someone eats if one of you eats garlic or onions, let him not come near our masjid. And the people who smoke cigarettes, that it is trouble. You know, if you sit next to one of them, they don't recognize it, but everybody else does. And they smell so bad, and the odor is just toxic, particularly if you're not used to it. Like, I was flying back from Houston, but this was not cigarettes. This fellow next to me, I changed my seat. You know, I felt I did something wrong on that day, because I was really punished. I changed my seat from like whatever C to whatever B, etc. And then who sat next to me was one of those very small planes, you know, two seats on both sides. Because the brothers wanted me after going to Chicago and Houston, they wanted me to come to Dallas. And then I did like so much changing of tickets. So I got on this plane to Memphis. Within this fellow was sat next to me, and he was extremely drunk. I don't know, it smelled, you know, he may think that it smelled good, but for me, this was, I felt that I was being punished for an enormity that I committed. I kept saying to myself, what have I done? Because this guy, and he kept on drinking cranberry, he kept on asking the attendant for cranberry, you know, forceful diuresis to get rid of the alcohol. You drink cranberry, you cause yourself diuresis, forceful diuresis, so the alcohol goes out of the urine. And so he kept on drinking this cranberry, and he kept on burping, and he kept on... then he was in real pain. You know, keep in mind, he doesn't recognize that he smells bad. You know, he knew that he was having a hangover after the alcohol, and he was in trouble, and he was in pain, and he felt sick and bad and so on and so forth. But the smell part, he probably doesn't recognize it. But to me, it was actually very nauseating. The people who smoke cigarettes, they don't recognize this. And if they're married, it's just not a good thing. And this is not because if some of you smoke, don't get too offended. But this is just the reality, and we have to speak reality. أبو هريرة رضي الله عنه said, أوصاني خليلي أن أقول الحق ولو كان مرة. My companion, the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم prescribed for me to say the truth even if it is sour. And because if you don't say the truth when it is sour, you're not preaching truth. You're preaching, you're catering to the audience. And a preacher should never cater to the audience. Okay, let's conclude this, and let's just reverse role. So we did understand that we will have to ask ourselves questions when we come across a byproduct. We have to ask ourselves the questions that we said we should ask ourselves. The default ruling is what, and where is this coming from? Has this been transformed into new substance? And has this been used in large amounts? Byproducts in general, in terms of the small ingredients, tell your kids to look for lard, animal shortening, gelatin, and glycerin, and don't overwhelm your kids with any more. Look for lard, animal shortening, gelatin, and glycerin. If it is okay, that candy is okay. If there's no lard, animal shortening, gelatin, or glycerin, that candy is okay. Chocolate liquor is not liquor. For your purpose, any other type of liquor should be abstained from. Ακούω το καλύτερα, θα πρέπει να ρωτήσω να μιλήσω λίγο.